Blog Talk Radio.
Enough is enough.
Yeah.
And you are not coming to the people's defense.
That's right, right.
So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better. Do what you say. This country is supposed to be about the land of the free for all. It has not been free for black people, and we are tired.
One question, protect and serve who? To me it seems that they just quit to observe you, and then they had the nerve to come and disturb you, enforce a curfew to physically hurt you. I heard the patience was a virtue, but how long we gonna disregard the fact is we all talk and practice this new age, trying to rebuke rage, or y'all gonna need some skin more tougher than Luke Cage. Trayvon, Terrence, they gone, perish, on up to George Floyd, see what your laws avoid, and now we gotta find some sort of order before the slaughter gets brought up with mortar report of those who do the unthought. This we gotta put a mandate on. You see my bullet wounds and try to put a band-aid on. As soon as one of us take a stand, they wrong, because you wanna keep us on your plantation. Come on.
Must be a better way.
It's where they come for ya.
The sheets are on,
and I don't see no comfort up. Now you may prepare for 2K, but they prepare for 3Ks. Hooda comes here later. I see you wants to fight for solidarity, and still in all I see a lot of y'all ain't hearing me. You know what? The fact is y'all kinda forgot to struggle like activists, all-timers. Learn to walk the walk on the path when it's narrow. Can't be crabs in the barrel, this is grabbing the apparel. We should demand order to correct the manslaughter for residents of Flint drinking tan water. And Puerto Rico, what ain't here for your people?
No.
Let's stay strong and try to keep a hand in it. Transcend it until the next pandemic. Let's go. You only got suspended. They all say I'm hating and only race bait. But we ain't gonna trust us until we get justice. Yeah. In the fight for peace, we gonna rise like sheep. Come on. Hey, cause in the darkest hour, we still fight the power. Yo, you can't stop the cavalry from Malcolm and Mallory. Come on. We're gonna keep it 100. We ain't trying to run from it. Yo, think we're gonna stay distracted. Y'all got it backwards.
We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against the common enemy.
That's what the white man wants you to do. Look at you. What makes you ashamed of being black?
Number love for
you. You know how hard it is.
No doubt.
Being a woman, a black woman
no
at that. In this white man's world. Sometimes we overlook the fact that we can ride hard in our city. We don't be knowing the pain we can cause.
This white man's world.
This white man's world. I ain't saying I'm innocent at all.
In this white man's world.
This song. Of all those times that I messed up, but we messed up.
Dear sister, got me twisted up in prison, I miss you. Crying, looking at my nieces and my nephews picture. They say don't let this cruel world get you. Kinda suspicious, swearing one day you might leave me for somebody that's richer. Twist the cap off the bottom, I take a sip and see tomorrow. Gotta make it if I have to beg a bottle. Beating love letters, late night, locked down and quiet. If brothers don't receive they mail, best believe we ride. Jack Mack, staring at the walls of silence inside this cage where they captured all my ways and violence. In time I learned a few lessons, never fall for riches. Apologies to my true sisters, far from bitches. Help me raise my black nation, reparations to do. It's true, of course
brought up in this world, I took advantage of you. So tell the babies how I love them. Precious boys and girls, born black in this white man's world.
And all the other ones.
To my homie's head, died in his bed, shot him to death and left him bleeding for his family to see. I passed his casket, didn't ask him if they had him for Jesus. My homeboy's doing life, baby mama be stressing, shedding tears when her son finally asked that question. Where my daddy at? Mama, why we live so poor? Why you crying? Heard you late night to my bedroom door. Now do you love me, mama? Why they keep on calling me nigga? Get my weight up with my hate and pay him back when I'm bigger. It's still sucking in his jail cell. Missing my block, hearing brothers screaming all night, wishing they stop. Proud to be black, but while we act like we don't love ourselves. So look around, but suck, check yourselves. Knowing what it means to be black, whether a man or girl, we still struggling in this white man's world.
White man's world.
We must fight for brother Lamar. We must fight for brother Lamar.
And a blink of an eye, my time away just made perfection. Cause I think I die, not going wild, why should I care? Like we holding on to lost love that's no longer there. Can you please help me? God bless me, please keep my seeds healthy. Making all my enemies bleed while my cheese welding. Hoping they bury me with ammunition, weed and shells. Just in case they trip in heaven, ain't no cheese in hell. Sister, sorry for the pain that I caused your heart. I know I'll change if you help me, but don't fall apart. Rest in peace to Lil Tasha, Lil Yummy and Kato. Too much for this cold world to take, ended up being fatal. Every woman in America, especially black, stay with me, can't you see that we under attack? I never meant to cause drama to my sister and mama, but we make it to a better time in this white man's world.
You're out of touch with reality. A few of you in a few smoke-filled rooms calling that the mainstream, while the masses of the people, white and black, red, yellow, and brown, poor and vulnerable, are suffering in this nation.
The seal and the Constitution reflect the thinking of the founding fathers that this was to be a nation by white people and for white people. Native Americans, blacks, and all other non-white people were to be the burden bearers for the real citizens of this nation.
My name is Asada Shakur, and I was born and raised in the United States. I am a descendant of Africans who were kidnapped and brought to the Americas as slaves. I spent my early childhood in the racist, segregated South. I later moved to the northern part of the country, where I realized that black people were equally victimized by racism and oppression. I grew up and became a political activist, participating in student struggles, the anti-war movement, and most of all, in the movement for the liberation of African Americans in the United States. I later joined the Black Panther Party, an organization that was targeted by the COINTELPRO program, a program that was set up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to eliminate all political opposition to the U.S. government's policies, to destroy the Black liberation movement in the United States, to discredit activists, and to eliminate potential leaders. Under the COINTELPRO program, many political activists were harassed, imprisoned, murdered, or otherwise neutralized. As a result of being targeted by COINTELPRO, I, like many other young people, was faced with the threat of prison, underground, exile, or death. The FBI, with the help of local police agencies, systematically fed false accusations and fake news articles to the press, accusing me and other activists of crimes we did not commit. Although in my case the charges were eventually dropped or I was eventually acquitted, the national and local police agencies created a situation where, based on their false accusations against me, any police officer could shoot me on sight. It was not until the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the mid-70s that we began to see the scope of the United States government's persecution of political activists. At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment.
I just want to spend a minute talking about a couple of the, you know, some of the parallels between mass incarceration and Jim Crow, and then, you know, end it. Once I get started talking here, I can go. But consider some of the rules and laws that apply to those labeled felons today, and ask yourself if they remind you of a bygone era. Denial of the right to vote. Right? 48 states and the District of Columbia deny prisoners the right to vote. Now, mind you, that's not the case in other Western democracies. You know, in fact, in other countries, there are often voting campaigns within prisons. There's voting drives within prisons. In other democracy is you don't forfeit your citizenship when you go to prison. You're still a person. You're still a citizen. You're still part of that country, even if you're in prison. You get to vote. In the United States, nearly every state denies prisoners the right to vote, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because then once you're released, you can be denied the right to vote for a period of years, maybe until your probation or parole expires, or for the rest of your life. It's up to the individual state. And nationwide, about 1 in 8 black men are either temporarily or permanently disenfranchised as a result of felon disenfranchisement laws. Exclusion from jury service. You know, one hallmark of the Jim Crow era, of course, was all-white juries, you know, particularly in the South. Well, these all-white juries have had a roaring comeback in recent years. Why? Well, in part because anyone convicted of a felony is considered automatically ineligible for jury service. Automatically ineligible for jury service. And then, get this. If you've ever had a negative experience with law enforcement, you can be struck from a jury for cause. You know, prosecutors able to persuade the judge that that negative experience that you have in law enforcement might bias your judgment in a criminal case. Now, good luck finding many African Americans, particularly of Portuguese of color, who have not yet had a negative experience with law enforcement that conceivably biased them in a criminal case. So even in some areas with relatively large black populations, you see all-white or nearly all-white
today, officials decree that rapper Brad Jordan, alias Scarface, must be stopped. After being monitored by Secret Service agents for 2 years, evidence leads tobacco and firearms officials to believe that his literally dope lyrics promote drug usage and distribution, degrade women, influence gambling, promote and teach violence, and more importantly, it's influencing our minors and destroying our communities. Officials say he's the lord of underground
once
rap,
again,
him and his music must be stopped.
We got this whole motherfucker on the mission. Now the whole entire world has gotta try to come up with a quick decision. They claim we threats to society, and now they're calling on the government to try to make somebody quiet for the bullshit they done to me. Gangsta Nip Spice warned that Tupac never gave a gun to me, so gangsta rap ain't done shit for that. I've even seen white folks from River Oaks don't get to get. So why you trying to kick some dust up? America's always been known for blaming us niggas, but they fucked up, and we were always considered evil. Now they're trying to bust our only code of communicating with our people. Let's peep the game from a different angle. Matt Dillon pulled his pistol every time him when someone tangled. So why you criticize me for the shit that you see on your TV? That freaks worse than TG. Just bring your ass to where they got me, so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong.
So now they trying separation and sending black folks in white coats to infiltrate our congregation, tapping into our conversation, taking the message that they get, bring forth wrong premeditation. So David's got a silver mask while listening to Brad. David gets pissed and killed his dad. David Duke's got a shotgun. So why you get upset? Cause I got one. A chest kit, a casket. A nigga got his ass kicked, shot in the face by a cop, closed casket. An open and shut situation. Cop gets got, they wanna blame it on my occupation. If you don't dig me, then nigga, you can sue me. Cause the shit that I be saying ain't worse than a Western movie. Don't blame me, blame your man Gotti. So you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
You better free your mind.
mind before I free my nun and stop fucking with these void of pop. I feel my hot rocks. Bang bang, boom boom, ping ping. I'm the black white boys, got a magazine and don't know how to act. I attack and make you vomit. Down with Khaled, I do my homage. Dewey got a brother, I'm McNeil. I'm the illest, wanna kill this house nigga Don Cornelius. Can you feel this? You punk niggas make me sick. Sucking on the devil, dick, scared of revolution. Need to start douching. Houston is the place. I caught a case. The motherfuckers tried to put a scar on my face. But I bust 2 times to the guts. Through the Reverend Calvin bust. Got a pair of nuts. I started this gangsta shit in 86. Now you're dissing me for publicity. Isn't he a hoe to the third degree? Who me? I'm a G that like to scrap a lot. Down with rap a lot. And I can't stop, won't stop. So fuck Bill and Hillary. Ice Cube, it ain't no killing me. Ice Cube, Scarface, dropping it on these sellout ass niggas. Doing it like
nigga don't believe that song, that nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga don't believe that song, that nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
My mother, my father, sisters, my brother, God. They were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term that calls for a one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in this state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school, program. But now on the side, I was studying things that I felt it would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, a control mechanism. Create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates, control inmates. And black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary. The black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Johnson had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Johnson felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those 5 civilians. I'm thinking that Johnson was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be solved.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You asking me to confess to something?
And unless happened, you wanted to, did you kill a man?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is to maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until it's been proven. And they'll never be able to prove it.
You know what I mean? It's war. You know what I mean? Yo, stick. You know what I mean? Shit be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs. Takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. When you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you're young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the Rock House, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gat battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kits versus Beans, a P versus Hov? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all goes down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people. People say she not war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead Prez, the People Radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the People's Radio. It's a takeover, not a make.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, myself, and our National Minister of Communication on the ones and twos, Sister Amina. Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. If you want to get in on tonight's topic, press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, an update on Mother Africa. Continue. We're going to open up our phone line style national chair, People's Political Party national chair, Nat Turner. Uhuru, black power, and all power to the people, comrade. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, brother. Right on, man. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. That's what's up. All power to people. Black power to black people specifically. And you're over with no equivocations. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we're going to pick up where we left off at. The mind, man, like it's been said, you know, it's a terrible thing to waste. And, thinking about the mother continent and, how beautiful it, you know, it actually is. Lest the Europeans continue their pace to demolish it, you know, plunder it vociferously, you know what I mean, tremendously, you know, and just a number of things, you know, come to mind. You know, just try to get through this one by one. It's so much, but you know, we started off just talking about the beginning of the end, so to speak. You know, in other words, the colonial period or occurrence, the invading of Africa by alien forces, opposing forces, whose psychology is totally juxtaposed to ours, you know, in spirit, you know, mentality, physically, psychologically, you know what I'm saying? Totally the opposite. Sometimes, you know, that word totally can be synonymous, I guess, with absolutely, like, but what I'm saying is just overwhelmingly, you know, like 99.99%, like, you know, and the fact that the psychology part, but the invasion of Africa, in the 1880s, there was this meeting. It's known as the Berlin Conference or something like that. You know, this gathering of so-called European powers or what have you, partition Africa into, you know, stakes, you know, like stakeholders and what have you. And they got together and decided among themselves that they would carve it up to their interest, rename regions and whatnot. There was one cold-blooded ass mass murderer, savage barbarian named King Leopold. Who was had been in the Congo, Central Africa, right? And there's a place, you know, they named these, like I said, you know, they named them after themselves. There's a place became known as Leopoldville, you know, after him, you know. In East Africa, the Germans were allowed or decided upon that they would have East Africa, a chunk of East Africa. And so they called that German East Africa, you know, British West Africa and so forth, you know. Colonies in North Africa was meted out to the French from the Red Sea, so to speak, or the Mediterranean Sea eastward to the Atlantic Ocean, you know, at the so-called top of Africa, towards North African countries like Morocco, you know, Algeria, Mauritania, Libya, countries like that. And so, and of course, the Italians, you know, had been given some of the stakes in East Africa, what have you. I believe Ethiopia, and a lot of the names that you see now, you know, European terminologies, the partitioning of these imaginary boundaries, which was strictly strategic, set up boundaries. And it's the same concept that's carried out here in the SNCCs, you know, how they take a region and split it up, you know, like in wards in Texas, you know, Fifth Ward and whatever, like, right? Louisiana has parishes. New York has boroughs, right? And, you know, it was by design, you know, that would be like that in order to create what? To create factionalism, you know? Like in the Caribbean to this day, you know, there's this colonial presence that's still it, you know, about the trainees and the, you know, and whatnot, and, you know, how the trainees don't like whatever, you know, some of the names slip by by right now, but, you know, you have these, just factionalism, you know, and at the hands of the Europeans, you know, Europeans, you know, these British colonies, French colonies in the Caribbean and whatnot, like Haiti, right? But it's the same concept. And so that's what they did in Africa, create these fictitional boundaries to create a habitat of static, you know, where the African brothers and sisters could not tell a diamond from a piece of glass due to the concept, which was a deadly one. Even in more recent times, you know, under, rapist Bill Clinton, murderer Bill Clinton, with the Hutu and Tutsi people in and around Rwanda. I saw an interview or like a it was a thing about you know, like the conditions in Rwanda, whatever, and the brother that was on there from, you know, considering a good activist, but he's taking the lead. But I noticed when he was talking about the country, and he said the name of the country, he had said Rwanda, you know, he said Rwanda, you know. I was like, okay, what are you, you know, that's in there, like, you know, because some people, you know, R or W, but, you know, just interesting how our people pronounce, like, the names and whatnot, you know. Like this fictional region that they created, South Africa, you know, indigenously, you know, they know it as Zambia, you know. But that's the whole concept, naming things after themselves after conquering it. And so, you know, our people, we internalized the whole colonial mindset, you know, the whole colonized state. And so, you know, the colonized and the colonized, you know what I'm saying? And it has been, you know, terribly crucial. You know, it's been terribly crucial. And it still affects us today, you know? Now, in the state as we speak. And, you know, we talked about the so-called coups or what have you. And we have to be very careful with that term, coup. Very careful with it. Because at times we don't know if the coup is a legitimate coup or a contrived coup for obvious reasons for the imperialists to keep their presence on the continent in the most sophisticated ways, you know what I'm saying? So, but, you know, we talked about certain countries, Burkina Faso, you know, Chad and whatnot, Mali. And when you talk about Burkina Faso, we talk about the young brother. I mispronounced his name. I'd say Traore, but it's actually the R is not there. So it's something like Traore. But to my understanding, as we speak, or in recent days, as we had actually said, that, you know, they were planning his demise, you know, as we speak. And so we have just gotten word that one of his head military men, you know, modern day Judas, he took the 30 shekels of silver from French sources, and these governments, these so-called governments, these regimes, have their and so-called intelligence services and whatnot, you know, what we all know as the CIA. And in Britain is MI6, and in Israel are the Mossad, you know. So the French intelligence services, obviously, the international spooks, wing of the state in France, you know. But we understand, those of us, you know, about the importance of his protection. At all costs, and consequences if harm is brought to this young warrior. I had to go out to him. We, as Peace Political Party, we stand by him in solidarity. We make no hesitation about that. We believe, as our brothers and sisters on the continent believe, in the Africa for the Africans, as Marcus Garvey had began to put that out and you know, popularize it, become a concept, way of life, actually, you know, to reconstitute Africa. Amilcar Cabral was the leader of the revolutionary struggle in Cape Verde, West Coast Africa. Had known better to say when sizing up colonialism and progress and whatnot. Yet said that when the Europeans arrived, the colonists arrived, civilization stopped. You know, and he's very clear on that. As opposed to all the Euro-American bullshit about them bringing civilization to Africa, to that part of Africa and whatnot, you know. The Europeans are so drunk off of skyscrapers and whatnot, you know, Boeing 747s and whatnot, you know, that they believe that that's civilization to them. Of course, the materialists that they are, as I had said, they're the opposite of the African. I've said before, in the past, the last time I checked, the first five letters in the word civilization was civil. And the Europeans have been anything but civil, especially towards black and brown people. And they've even had their own problems historically. For the past, we can at least say for the past 2,500 years, you know, going back to Greece, you know, so-called Greek city-states, you know, Athens, Corinth, and so forth, you know, the Greek city-states and how they were constantly at war with one another, you know. Factionalism, deadly factionalism, Sparta and whatnot. You know, you see how that mentality of violence had been transferred over the ocean to this day, and the common link between Greek violence and Euro-American violence, you can see that simply by acknowledging or taking a cursory glance at the Michigan State college football team, whose mascot or nickname is the Michigan State Spartans, you know, which is where that name came from, because the Spartans were who? It will be the equivalent of warriors, troops, soldiers, fighters, and whatnot, you know. But that whole concept, that whole twisted psychology, there's this putting together certain terms to define it, you know, to sum it up as a psychosocial, sexual dysfunctional behavior. There's an incredible book that was written by Elder Marimba Anit, called The Urugu. And it's an extraordinary book. That's a thick book. It's an extraordinary book, though. But she talks about the psychology of European behavior in the book. And, man, it's, you know, phenomenal. You know, I recommend that for those who dare to read, you know, who dare to, you know, get to some type of factual grounding, some type of solid ground and understanding the African predicament, if we will, pending revolution. It's abolition through revolution, you know, through revolutionary process, revolutionary struggle. And there's been certain successes in Africa. We can see Robert Mugabe as a classic example when the brothers and sisters in what is now referred to as Zimbabwe, which was formerly named after one Cecil Rhodes, who was a so-called British magnate, industrial magnate, who had accumulated massive wealth through the diamond mines that were exploited in southern Africa. And so Cecil Rhodes had an idea with a spade and a metal bucket. And there's this story that is told of Cecil Rhodes that upon discovering the so-called huge crater in the Witch Waters Rhine, which is a sort of Dutch-like language, whatever. And it said that Cecil Rhodes, when he was about 19 years old or somewhere up in the head, went to the edge of the crater with the spade and bucket in his hand and decided that from that day forward he would end up being rich. And what Cecil Rhodes did was in accumulating massive wealth, he had an idea. Not only just to accumulate wealth, like, you know, some people, you know, get rich, you know, like, you know, some young brothers get drafted, whatnot, you know, and then in NFL, whatever, first round, first pick, and he, you know, ends up with a $100 million contract over 7 years, right? And, you know, you're okay, what's he going to do with $100 million? What's a 21-year-old young person like that going to do with $100 million, you know, right? And, you know, yeah, you know, we ain't had nothing, we had shit, you know, we've seen all the, you know, whatever, you know, yeah, we're going to get a big-ass house, mansion, we're going to call the nice cars, jewelry, clothes, and taking trips and jets and yachts and all kind of shit. Some people going to personalize a goddamn four-wheel or whatever, right? Well, Rhodes didn't do that. What Rhodes did was set his money up in such a way that he would place them in what's called a trust, right? And this is the other thing that kicked our ass, the trust thing. Rhodes had accumulated all of this money, right, by enslaving, of course, Africans. And he had parceled that money into seven sectors in trust funds that became as wills. And so he placed these seven wills in the trust of a one, I believe, let me make sure, where's a Rothschild? And that name will pop up. It should. But he had placed it in the possession of one of the Rothschild. The Rothschild family had started off, you know, their ancestor, their progenitor, whatever you want to call them, started off in the early 18th century, you know, before the so-called American Revolution or whatever, right? And he ended up accumulating a lot of money. He had, I believe, five sons, and he had a plan. Again, you know, he set his sons out, you know, the different parts of Europe and whatnot, so they can establish themselves as what is this word? Money handlers, so to speak, right? And in Germany, I believe it was in Germany, France, London, it may have been Italy, and somewhere else, another one of the other countries, Bavaria, Prussia, something like that. Well, anyway, that's what they had planned. Well, Cecil Rhodes had actually got a start through the Rothschild. You know, they had financed him. You know, they loaned him the money. They kicked out the money of his idea. And so that's what he was able to do. This is why he was able to, you know, he knew who to trust, with trust for him, with the wills and stuff. And there were seven of them. And part of this, you know, the basic structure of or the basic objective and goal of these wills was to reclaim America. You know, to win America back into the imperialist empire, the British Empire. And in the midst of that, they confiscated, like I said, huge chunks of Africa. this violence mentality, like I said, you know, from Greece, you know, to more modern times, it showed itself what was referred to as the Boer War, you know what I'm saying, in southern Africa. The Boer, B-O-E-R, these the, you know, another white group, you know, who had become known as the Boers. And so the British and the Boers, and that the Boers had obviously some, we can say, valuable real estate. So the British decided, well, we want a piece of the action. And so they moved in. And the Boers, you know, they were like, you know, they were, you know, like two rams, you know, they butt heads, you know, they like, you know, that led to the Boer War, because the British, they were like, look, we about to snatch this shit up, and we're not, you know, they tried to, you know, go in, you want to bargain with something, and it was an amazing display, you know, here the Boers came in, and then done what they done to the Africans. Then the British come in after the Boers and tell the Boers and whatnot, we can just that, and the Boers disagree. And that's how that shit started. In the meantime, who was caught in the middle of it? The Africans, our brothers and sisters, right? And part of that, like the southern African region, when they snatched up what is now known as Zimbabwe in honor of Cecil Rhodes, they named it Rhodesia. That's how it got its name. The colonial name was Rhodesia. And so, you know, decades and decades of rulership until one Robert Mugabe had come along in the 20th century and decided that was enough of that shit. And so Mugabe would organize him and some other brave Africans, and they were organized in the bush, and was referred to as the bush, and develop an army, a people army, and that they would decide that they were no longer going to live under British rule, colonialism. And so they made that move. And there's this it's a term that they use called the Chimurenga. You know, the Chimurenga one, the Chimurenga two, the Chimurenga three, and this is it became a way of life, a lifestyle, a whole culture, guerrilla campaign, you know, unconventional war and whatnot, you know, and you know, knowing the terrain and shit like that, and that's how they were able to outstrip the British in their so-called superior firepower, you see, and along the way, you know. Mugabe and his you know, his head military man, you know, sort of like Che and Castro, you know, in Cuba. Who is it? Ho Chi Minh. Excuse me, Ho Chi Minh and Ho Chi Minh Jap in Vietnam, you know, and the combination of a military, political, and military wing, and so I saw. You know, they were actually filmed, you know, their campaign. And so I saw a clip of, you know, this head military brother. And it was interesting that he had said that he actually thanked the British for shaping them. He actually thanked the British for making them who they became. And that they had went through trial and error. And that when they fought, you know, they went out there and the British showed them something about themselves. The British showed them the shortcomings and whatnot. And that is what made them get to the point of perfecting their military style and craft to run the British out of Zimbabwe, you know, and then rename it from Rhodesia. You see, and Mugabe, you know, being the head, and these brothers, they sacrificed, you know, and then it was a war, contrition, you know, unconventional war. And to this day, you know, Mugabe, even in the grave, is hated. And you know, had ruled Zimbabwe for years as the leader. And see, the thing, you know, the Europeans said, well, he ruled Zimbabwe. And it's a whole host thing, but propaganda is very powerful. It's very powerful, you know. And so in the 90s and the 2000s and whatnot, you know. And there was always this attempt, this move, and the British Crown never they never let up, and their agents was there in Zimbabwe, of course, with their buddies on the other side of the ocean, you know, the CIA, their spooks, you know, the constant concept and whatnot, you know. And it's the same shit over and over again. But they were able to thwart every attempt. And, of course, you know, the last bastion would be to get somebody just like him, you know, to run against him and they finance him and whatnot, you know, plot his demise and so forth, you know. And it's the same shit. And that, you know, and we witness, you know, well, we've gotten wind of it with the young brother in Burkina Faso who's following in the footsteps of one Thomas Sankara, who had taken up the same similar mantle, you know, referred to as a Marxist revolutionary, a Pan-Africanist and whatnot, you know. And there's also Samora Michelle, in what is referred to as Mozambique, you know. His death, of course, in the plane crash in 1986. And, of course, you know, we may be a little crazy, but we're not stupid. Plane crashes are one of the forms of operation of elimination, you know, and so forth, you know. But
Black Power, Chuck.
Go ahead, Conrad. We got somebody?
Nah. I just wanted to add when you said about the plane crash.
Oh, come on, come on, come on.
I was going to think and tie it back into what happened with the Malaysian Airlines. There was four prominent people that was on that plane when the plane went so-called missing. And we all know a plane of that magnitude and that size is a block long. And they claimed that they couldn't find it. But then come to find out after doing the people's investigation, there was four prominent people who had just filed for a patent to get some type of chemical to where it was like a certain type of poison what they was coming up with, and the government wanted that potion. They wanted the ingredients on how to make it, but the people wanted the patent first before they sold it to the government, the state, or what have you. So you know, it takes 14 days for a patent to be cleared. So it's just ironic that after that plane crash, the patent was cleared, and guess who was over the patent to speak? Black Power.
Man, that's what's up, straight up. That was a jewel right there. That's where you go, man. You know, put people on game, and that's the type of information we should be able to have access to, so we can, you know, it takes that, you know, because we have to remember, you know, the colonial mind, you know, is a black man that's turned inside out. You know, he becomes a white man in black face, you know. And I'd heard about that, you know. And you know, it's something. You know, it would trigger something. Another one example, I believe the Lockerbie bombing or something with a plane, whatever, you know, and he blamed Gaddafi and all this kind of shit, you know, the Libyans did and all this kind of, but as a former, I guess, former intelligence operative for Israel or whatever, I saw it on, you know, these alternative media shows, which is actually, it's been a while since I've seen these shows, but it's like one or two of them or whatever. One is called Buzzsaw. And this is the son of the guy that made JFK. His name escapes me right about now. And then the other one called Watching the Hawks or something like that, right? And the guy, you know, this white girl, they do that show. And the white boy, his father is Jesse Ventura. His father is Jesse Ventura. And so I think his name is Stone that made JFK, Oliver Stone. Well, his son has a show called Buzzsaw, right? So I saw this show where he had a guest on there. And he was, to my understanding, he was a former Israeli intelligence officer or whatever. And he talked about that plane, that bomber. And he said just what you said. He said they had a team of American investigators on that plane trying to come back because they had went on a mission, on one mission, trying to discover something, right? And in the midst of that, fell upon something else. And they were going back to the Justice Department to squeal. And he said that they were on that plane, that same plane. You know, yeah. You know? And the people not being able to think for themselves or come away, oh, there they go with that conspiracy theory shit again, you know? But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, so understanding, you know, what it takes, the determination to liberate Mother Africa at all costs and the struggle there. And the younger people have grown tremendously, you know. And it's always been the younger people, of course, African history, you know, in the struggles. Even when Robert Williams visited Africa, I believe he had visited Tanzania, and some say Tanzania, you know, and whatnot. And there's a video footage of Robert Williams with all these young people, you know, and they were like treating him like a king. And the youth, they were, you know, they were charged up, you know. They were willing to take on the task. And that is what made the state so frightened of Robert Williams' potential, which is why, you know, he had to flee the country, you know, fleeing the country from political murder. You know, he ended up in China, had an audience with Chairman Mao, you know, who welcomed them. Even the Black Panther Party members, you know, Huey P. Newton, they welcomed them. They welcomed them, you know. And, you know, this ties in the reason why Thomas Sankara was a Marxist revolutionary, because Chairman Mao had, in a sense, in essence, perfected the, you know, the Marxist theory or whatever about the contradictions, nature of capitalism and its demise and its defeat. You know, and you know they studied it. You know the science of capitalism and whatnot. You know, and this is what made him successful in overthrowing, you know, Japanese imperialism, because the Japanese wanted to have some hold in some colonies like the Brits and the American pigs. You know, and so Huey, you know, the Black Panther Party, they began to study that, and they could relate to it. And Sankara began to study and could relate to it. And so they saw capitalism as the enemy. The divisive nature of capitalism. Capitalism is a me concept. You know, competition, you versus me versus you. The only collectivity can only be in the small hand of the white ruling class pigs, who have some other pigs to protect them. And everybody else is cannon fodder. And let's not get it twisted. The white ruling class, the white middle class, those who obviously is going to roll along with them in their most dangerous racist ways, more dangerous than those who are outwardly expressing their views, you know, such as the Ku Klux Klan, the neo-Nazis, and the white nationalist moves and whatnot, you know. You know, hey, you know, we don't like niggas, you know. And you have the poor whites, and even some of them poor whites. If the rich white ruling class capitalists would just do the right thing, and pay their fair share of taxes and cut them in, there were a lot of those poor whites who in one vein saw them as class enemies. And a lot of them would give that shit up overnight if they would cut them in, you know. And then, of course, there's the other segment of whites who had become transformed through understanding the contradictions of capitalism, you know. And that was the understanding that St. Carol, a lot of other brothers who had become leaders, young leaders, you know, in the 50s, in the 60s, you know, which went on into the 70s, you know. Cabral, Amilcar Cabral, brilliant. What I've learned myself personally from Cabral was born politicizing those who whom he led, those whom he would instruct in communicating with the people and going into the village with the people and whatnot, you know, get them to realize, you know, the task of transforming the people out of true revolutionary love. And Cabral would say, you know, okay, you know, in so many ways, you know, yeah, I see, you know, you're well learned, and, you know, yes, you know, you got big head, you know, so to speak, you know, like East Asians might say, you know. But anyway, it's okay, but what you going to teach the people, you know, how you know, what the first thing you're going to say to people, how you going to teach me, you know, things like that. So, you know, he kept his feet on the ground. You know, he was very brilliant. And as I stated a little earlier, that Cabral reached a conclusion independent of the colonial's mind that when the Europeans came, civilization stopped. You know, that they didn't come and bring us no civilization. Because in order to bring somebody civilization, you have to be uncivil. First of all, you can't bring a civilized people civilization because they're already civil. You see, so it makes no sense at all, period. It doesn't hold any weight at all, not an ounce of weight, period, point blank. It's lighter than a butterfly. No. But the whole colonial aspect and the struggle to stage of imperialism and Kwame Nkrumah, you know, comes along and you know, into the stage too, you know. And we spoke about him, how he was betrayed by the British. Excuse me, how the British was courting him, you know, being educated, you know, in the Euro-American environment, you know. Where he talks about the highest stage of imperialism is neocolonialism. You know, and that's where Africa's at today. And now we're starting to see, those of us who are conscious of it, are seeing the chickens coming home to roost. You know, the crisis of capitalism in foreign countries, particularly black and brown non-white countries. And even in some countries, white countries, you know, like in Greece and whatnot, you know. France and some of these countries now are in turmoil, you know. But you know, you're starting to see this unfolding, what the Hindus refer to as karma, and that momentum, you know, picks up, and it has to stay that way, or it'd be a failed attempt, you know, overnight. But from that point to the stage today, now the one thing that I will hope to also try to get out, you know, such as, you know, such things as the African Union and whatnot, and this clandestine operation, unbeknownst maybe to most of us, refer to as AFRICOM. You know, you look at the term, and of course, you know, it appears to be the combination of two terms or two words, Africa and communication. And this is a whole imperialist, empirical military operation. We had talked about how they seized the moment with the Machiavellian tactic of creating the boogeyman to give them legitimacy for their presence in Africa. And talking about how this strategy concept is practiced in Northern Africa with the French refusing to leave. You know, we talked about Mali. We talked about how they'd take the indigenous brothers and sisters. I didn't mention this name, but more times than that, they're known as the Tuaregs, T-U-A-R-E-G-S. And these are warrior fighters, in some instances, guerrilla fighters, indigenous brothers and sisters who survived the onslaught of Islam in Northern Africa. That's one group, that's one faction. And then you have, of course, you know, the Muslim-led governments and whatnot, you know, you see the brothers with the Arabic names and whatnot, you know. And then, of course, you have the capitalists, the French. And so it can be a mixed bag, you know. One minute you can play off the black Muslims against the traditional African brothers, you know, who would be represented as the Tuaregs, their traditional religious way of life, which has been in existence since they can remember, you know. That's the concept of using terrorism to the Machiavellian strategy, you know, to legitimate your presence through the UN, the whole UN shit, you know, the whole game, the World Trade Organization and whatnot. I'm telling you, it's so much, man. But the UN, this UN Council about resolutions and whatnot, sending in an international peace corps, army or whatever, to so-called establish peace. And you can look all over the continent where you see the imperialists in their most sophisticated forms and whatnot, the same shit. And there's no way that it brought any peace. They did the same thing to Lumumba in the late 50s, you know, on into the 60s, you know, the UN Council resolution and whatnot, you know. And so who was able to come in there? It was the Belgians, you know. They had fomented uncivility, you know, within the populace, created a crisis, you know. Yes, it is true that a white boy named Dag Hammarskjöld, who has, a, you know, his name, of course, you know, sort of like Denmark, Danish, Swedish, whatnot. You know, and he was the head of the UN or and whatnot, you know, or you know, they have these whatever divisions at their place. So, and it appeared that he had developed an understanding of Lumumba's position, and died in a plane crash. You know what I'm saying? Died in a plane crash. You know, the death of Hammarskjöld, who was actually on his way to the Congo, you know. So there's the one good white boy that we are not going to try to defy the law of nature, you know. But he died in a plane crash. But the same Machiavellian strategy and same Machiavellian tactic is used, and in these strategic places, right? These strategic places, which gives legitimacy to AFRICOM. AFRICOM is no more than a U.S. imperial policy, military policy, international army, which has planted itself in Africa to do what? as the pigs protect property here in America, so does AFRICOM military protect property over there on the continent. And so what they do is, you know, they're buddies. There's a book called the let me see if I can think of it. The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. As a matter of fact, let me think I can get my hands on it right quick. Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Let's see. Give me 1 second here. Okay, here we go. The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, brought to you by one John Perkins. Now, he had wrote, of course, that book, and then now they have what's called the New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. 15 explosive new chapters with new revelations on how economic hitmen have spread in the United States and worldwide. How the EHM system is more treacherous today than ever. What we can do individually and collectively to save our freedom. Now, he has nerve. He has the, let me use that term, the unmitigated gall, the audacity after all he did as an economic hitman. Now he's talking that shit about what we can do to save our freedom. No. Not once did he say that in Africa. When he was doing, on Latin America in particular, which is why I believe what he did a lot of damage. Of course, what they referred to, what they made up is the Middle East. You know, now he's older guy, white hair and so forth. I mean, he's made a grip, you know. And then he's written a book on top of that, which gives him extra grip. You know, so we say the damage that you did in Africa. You know, we feel that you should fork over at least half the loot that you made from writing the book to tell how you did it. But that is the wing that takes care of establishing foreign policy, right? In other words, the snakes create a policy, let's say, for Nigeria. They send him in with the policy, with the whole infrastructure and the idea, right? And they have a so-called audience with the Nigerian heads and whatnot, and they sit down. You know, you see that shit on TV where they show you, like, this pig, Trump or whoever, you know, this pig Biden going over and having an audience with Japan's premier emperor and whatnot. You know how they do the whole photo op shit. They stand there and shake hands. You know, they set up their, you know, the United Snakes flag in the background and set up the Japanese flag in the background, the white flag with the red dot. And they sit up there and do all the handshaking and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? All that shit there. And then they sit down and they, you know, they talk diplomacy. Well, this is what John Perkins used to do. Yeah. And so, you know, they would go in there with this. This is the program right here. And whichever country bucked against it, okay, well, there's a war going on now. There's a war. You know, they drum up the atmosphere for war. And what do? You have to legitimate the war. And so what you do, you create groups like Boko Haram and call them terrorists. That's how it works. That's a Machiavellian strategy, Machiavellian tactic. To give legitimacy to AFRICOM for being there. Okay, there's a boogeyman out there kidnapping the women and the children. We got to go in and stop this terrorist, you know, to give legitimacy, to basically topple a democratically elected, a true democracy, right? Like in Haiti, John Aristide, Jean-Claude Aristide, I think his name, Aristide, was a champion of the people. He had come up with a people's program. right? And what happened? They overthrew him in the coup. They had these barbaric motherfuckers, you know. They had weapons. And
the whole room.
You look at the weapons. Yeah, go ahead, Conrad. What we got? What we got?
Nah, I just wanted to see if anybody wanted to chime in. Just press 1 to participate. You wanted to get in on
right
tonight's on. Topic or you had any comments or anything. Black Power.
Right on, man. Right on, right on, right on. That's up, straight up. Yeah, man, feel free to do so, or sister, whatever, or if you're listening. But anyway, you know, the concept, you know, the whole strategy to pull the shit off, you know, attack their currency, devalue their currency. So if you do all these things, what do you get? You get a crisis, and then you get a food shortage. When you have an embargo, how does the embargo work? The embargo works through the, what they call the WTO, World Trade Organization, right? Man, it's so much. Damn, so much. it take my time. I ain't in no rush. So when you create this crisis, next thing you know, all you need now is the media. That's all you need now is the media. Right, and of course, there's always an opposing side. You know the handful of Judas, right? Like the Judas nigger, like we were saying in the neighborhood, bitch ass nigger. Take the 30 shekels, you know, to murder his own brother. Right, and all you need now is the media, and the media strategically places itself in certain areas. And what do they show? The people running and in the street frantic, right? You see violence, right? Right? You know, you see, you know, motherfuckers throwing Molotov cocktails and whatever they get their hands on, you know, stones, bricks, rocks, bottles, whatever, right? You know, smashing shit, right? Right? And what would they say? Oh, the people have grown tired. And of course, if there are people planted there, don't believe this, don't believe the hype. They have their plants, and it just so happened to be that the cameraman and Anderson Cooper just happened to be standing there, and then he stopped somebody, and he asked him what's going on, and then that's what that person said. The people have grown tired. We've lived under this dictator. Yeah, literally, that's how this shit works. That's Machiavellian-style strategy. That's how it works. And, of course, the dumbed-down, gullible American public, right? Who tries to project yourself around the world to everybody else that they're intellectually IQ superior to every fucking body else, right? Right? Just as dumb as a brick as anybody else. And then they buy into the shit. That's how it works. And then who comes? Oh, here comes the cavalry. You know, the good guys. They're going to save what? The damsel in distress. Right? Now, as part of this plan, what these pigs do, they trade machinery, weaponry, military training, right? Gear, logistics, and everything, right? In exchange for what? What's under your foot? What's under your feet? See, that's how it works. They send in the geologists. They send in the geologists. And what does the geologist do? The word petro is the word, basically, that means rock. It's a way to get the word petroleum from. And this is when people talk about money, and when you want to buy oil or whatever, you trade, right? And this is why they call it petrodollars. Because the standard, when they set up the, what is it, the General Agreement on trade tariffs and trade, and which is called GATT for short. Right, they set all this up after World War II. After they settled their little differences and whatnot, and then they start consolidating whatever, right? And they decide, well, we ain't gonna be no more war between us white people, because we ain't enough of us motherfuckers on earth to begin with, right? So once they set these cartels up, they put themselves in the position of loftiness, which would obviously leave the black and brown groups at a disadvantage. right? So if you try to buck against that and say, look here, the rent just went up, right? Or we're told this because it's creating massive poverty in our country. What the French should do, or the British, or the Germans, right? What they'll do, or the Italians, right? What they'll do is they'll go to the World Trade Organization, which is a so-called international body, right, of world trade, right, and sue that country for $200 million. And in arbitration, what did the judge do? He rules in the Italian's favor. And so that country has to fork up $200 million. And if you thought they were in debt already, that's the equivalent, no different than what goes on here in America, in the mean streets that night, on the West Coast, like in places like Vegas. We have a pimp, and he got some hoes, right? That's the cold heart, cold-blooded language that they use, right? Pimps and hoes. That's what that's the equivalent of. That's what that's the equivalent of. It's just on a larger scale in a much more sophisticated form. And guess what? It's all legal. Now, let us ask ourselves, who set up the World Trade Organization? You see, just like we ask, well, who set up the Constitution? Who set it up? There are bylaws, right? So who set it up? Was it the Africans? Was it the black and brown nations that set the shit up? No. If the Europeans set it up, and then to disguise themselves, what did they do? Oh, we're going to we bring in, you know, the U.N. This is why you rarely going to see a white man as the UN chairman. You know they don't have to do that. That's it. We're going to look. One year we're going to choose a nigga from Nigeria, black in suit, right? Then we're going to choose another nigga from Southern Africa, black in suit, right? And then we're going to choose a Latino, brown man, put him up there. And then, you know, we'll choose the East Asian one, you know, right? You know, mixed. That's why they do it. They don't worry about that shit. It's what's behind him. He's just a figurehead. It's why some people can understand why, what is his name? Kofi Annan, this nigga here. You can understand it. This is a black man. How is he, you know, he should be looking out for the mother continent. What's the problem? You know, they think if they see somebody black, like, okay, we're going to be good. We got a black man running this shit, man. No, you don't run nothing. You don't run nothing. He's a figurehead to keep you asleep. All this is Machiavelli. What does Machiavelli say in The Prince? You must make them feel like they belong. This is one of the planks that he taught The Prince. You must make them feel like they belong. This is why some brothers and sisters, when they go vote, what they tell them, it's a slogan. Nah, it's a fucking T-shirt, bumper sticker. What is it? I voted. Right? My vote counts. I participate in democracy today. Yes, well, that's how it works. That's Machiavelli. Listen, it don't matter if it's Trump, Biden, Bush, Clinton, Bush Senior Devil, Bush Junior Devil, Clinton, Obama, Clinton, Reagan, Carter, Ford, Tricky Dick. Right, well, they call Tricky Dick Richard Nixon. Don't matter. You know, we know that an elephant looks nothing like a jackass. A blind man couldn't tell. I mean, he couldn't fuck that up. He couldn't fuck it up. You know, he couldn't fuck it up. But this is the strategy that they do. Right, and so whatever country decides that we look okay, fuck y'all. It's our shit. How you gonna tell us what to do with the shit that accumulates under our feet and our ancestors have been here for 100,000 fucking years? Okay, that's your problem. You the one that made that shit over there. You should have thought about it. You should have thought about it. It's dependent on the stuff that grows underneath our feet. We should have thought about this shit. You see? So it will continue to be an imbalance. Until what? Until what? If you think that we can go and appeal to these white men's moral character, or there's a moral side to these white men, you need some psychiatric treatment. This is what the British did. The British were outsmarted the rest of the imperialist buddies by creating this thing called an autonomous zone. You know, self-rule, autonomy. Now, some people get the shit twisted. They get it twisted. They think that rule and control is the same thing. They think that rule and control is the same thing. The old man Rothschild is known to say, give me control of that nation's currency, and I care not who makes his laws. Let me say that again. Give me control of that nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. In other words, there's what's called the Federal Reserve and United States law. I fucked up. Let me correct myself. United States laws. Those are two separate bodies. Which one is more powerful? You don't vote in the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and neither the rest of the body. They're selected. So who selects them? Who selects them? Who selects them? Is it the people? How come the people don't select them? So is that a democracy? Is it? We'll let somebody else answer that question. That is what they do. It's the same strategy. So they created the World Trade Organization to their advantage. We throw them in a crisis. You show it on international media. And then you send in the cavalry. If you take a map of Africa, and I shit you not, you can take the map twice, but I'm going to say this one first. You can take a map of Africa and look historically at these wars that have taken place and the ones that are going on, these internecine wars, factional wars that are happening right now and in the past. Take a black marker and just draw an X everywhere where you found them. And then make a comparative analysis between what America needs, what the Anglo-American establishment led imperialists are after, and you will see that shit exactly where these wars are being fought. Wherever you see these so-called terrorists in Africa, right? Take a marker, just mark them off. And just look at that country and look at the Anglo-American-led imperialist establishment, right, and their holdings, and you'll see an interesting parallel. It is no coincidence that the strike that has been going on in the Congo is going on. It's no coincidence that the strike that's going on in Sudan is taking place, and they just happen to have some oil reserves in that country that they've portioned out into South Sudan, and whatnot. No coincidence. But this John Perkins fellow, he gives you in depth. He tells you the tricks of the trade and shit. Yeah, I think at some point he talks about Osama bin Laden, how they was courting him, the Taliban, and all these other people. Now the Taliban was something else. No. But the whole point is to create this the terrorist narrative. And so Afrikaner, you know, and of course, like I said, put a nigga up there and make him the head chief commander of the whole operation. And what do we do? What's the Boule doing? The Boule is celebrating this as a great accomplishment. As a great accomplishment. You know, his family's proud of him. My dad is the head of Africa. I'm over there in Africa. I'm going there next month. I'm going to spend a month with my dad. You know, I go there, bring his camera, whatever, his phone, whatever, and take pictures, travel here, travel there, whatever, go to these beautiful places and whatnot, you know. And go, even go mingle with some young African brothers who will take his ass out to a fucking tree and show him how where the hell the goddamn cologne or the deodorant that we put under our arms come from. Yeah. Some young brothers went there years ago. It was like teenagers. And so, of course, they go to, you know, they go there and whatnot, and, you know, going back to Africa and finding my roots and whatnot. So what the young brothers did, young brothers took them out into the bush and took them to some trees and showed them the trees and grabbed a whole bundle of trees and broke a whole bundle of leaves, right? There's a particular type of leaves that grow. And what they did was they took them and they got a bundle up and they broke them in half and told the young brothers to smell. What did they smell? The goddamn cologne that they sell you in Walmart. Yeah. The fragrance that they put in men's cologne that they sell you in Walmart. I ain't making this shit up. Can't make it up. But, you know, that whole thing. In the meantime, what's happening over there? And so what are they training these troops for in Sierra Leone and Nigeria and Ghana? What are they training them for? What are they training them for? What are they training them for? Or are they training them to fight terrorism? This is amazing. And this is what our brothers and sisters are facing with something that's rarely mentioned. That's barely mentioned. You know, and even among some of us conscious heads, you know. And so it's on an international scale, like the Black Panther Party leader, Huey P. Newton, said about the pigs. Well, they couldn't possibly be here to protect it because we don't own anything. So they're here to protect property. Do the Africans own the shit or do the corporations own it? Well, the corporations have set themselves up through the World Trade Organization. You know? Under such things as leases, you know, in some of the most affluent countries or regions, in terms of agriculture, right? I believe in such countries such as Ethiopia, or whatnot. Some countries, I believe. Southern Africa, Central Africa, whatnot, West Africa. But there's this ridiculous hustle, right? And before you know it, using this such sophisticated language and jargon, right? The Africans are not conscious. And that's not to say all of them are not. But some of them have figured the shit out. You know, they figured it out. But a 99-year lease, a 99-year lease on, let's say, 1 million acres of land, isn't that amazing? To do what? To do what? To do what? To grow what? And you want to talk about starvation. You want to talk about being unable to afford food, growing wheat. What is wheat? Wheat produces what? Bread. Right? You see some of these bread companies, right? And they put the honey in it. It's a honey wheat bread. You go in the store now, how much is it now? What, $5, $4, right? And so wheat. Emmer, you know, things like that, barley, right? And they've gotten themselves in this position. And this is why those young brothers are coming around and they're starting to get it more and more and more and more and more. And they're starting to learn and understand the true nature of capitalism. Capitalism, religion is profit motive. And capitalism is his Bible. But this is how they do it. This is how they run it. and the Europeans are getting a hard on over Zimbabwe, land redistribution, right? And in places of Southern Africa also, right? Land redistribution. And now the descendants of the Boers, the Dutch, have the audacity to claim racism and violence. It is an amazing display. Amazing display. And so in Southern Africa, what do you have? You have, what is his name? Julius Malema. You know, I love, I've got to know, like, how we spell, like, our names, like, right? And I had mentioned the young brother who played basketball for the Milwaukee Bucks with the long last name. But in Africa, you will see a name, Malema, but it starts with an M, right? So the M obviously becomes silent. But I, you know, it's just something. It's the beauty of how we string our letters. Of course, the name has meaning, you know? but the meanings of it, you know. But here's a brother, a very charismatic brother. You know, establishing an organization. In Southern Africa, there's still this. And look, just go to show you how the colonialist impact still lingers. What do you have in Southern Africa when it comes to form of government? What a parliament. There's even some cases where you see these so-called brothers who would be judges, you know, how they settle matters in the court, right? Where they wearing the old white wig with the long, you know what I'm saying, like George Washington. No, they're wearing the white wig like the British wore, you know, like they still wear today, but in a colonial country. You know, and so you see his brother, black as pitch, you know, got natural hair, little afro, and he puts this wig on, a white, you know, like white man's hair with a long braid. It's amazing. That gives you an idea the type of state of mind. How this shit still lingers. You know, and there's this perception like, oh, well, shit, the Africans didn't have any type of judiciary process before the white man came. The Africans didn't have a philosophy before the white man came. You might as well go and say we didn't have a damn language before the white man came. Well, what the hell were we doing? You might as well say that we didn't know there was a one God before the white man came. We didn't know none of that. Until the white man came, now we have philosophy. White man said, now we have a one God. You know, white man said, now we have a government. You know, we have a judicial system. You know, we have economics. Now there's a white man here. And that's bullshit. That's bullshit. The great Sheikh Anthony Diop wrote tremendous books. It's a book he wrote called Pre-Colonial Africa. And he goes into, well, what was Africa like before the white man came? Before the colonials came, the imperialists came. You know? No nation is perfect. But this is what Cabral meant when he said civilization stopped when the Europeans came. It didn't progress. Because if it would have progressed, you still wouldn't see this shit about some developing nations after 1,000 goddamn years. The developing country, the developing world, you know, the developed world, as opposed to the developing world. And so what they do is they'll take Brazil, they'll take India, you know, and give you an example. See, it's working. See, capitalism is working over there. See, democracy is working over there. Look at the Indians now. The Indians have the largest growing economy right now. Look at the Brazilians right now. The Brazilians have the largest growing economy in the Western Hemisphere. You know, it's an amazing display. It's an absolutely amazing display of this shit. But what they don't do is they don't go into intricacies and show you the real shit. You see? That's what they don't do, and that's what they're not going to do, because you'd have to be an idiot, a complete idiot, to think that any good could come out the devil. If you was raised that there was a devil And of course, the average brother and sister, you know, come up in the church, you know, the Black Baptist Church, and the Bible is cornerstone. So obviously, you know, you get only thing you know you ain't getting from the Quran, you ain't getting it from the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, you ain't getting it from the Confucius books, you ain't getting it from none of that shit. That you only thing that you've been allowed to get from is the Bible. So you've been taught that there's a devil. What I'm trying to figure out is how these highly learned, intellectual Black people trying to appeal to the moral character of someone whose actions have would place him in the under the category, okay, you take God and the devil, who would you place him? You place him under the character of the devil. So how do you try to appeal to the devil's moral character when he don't have one? You see, that's what I'm trying to figure out. And we come from that perspective, something's gravely wrong here. We don't have to look at the devil and go, we ain't got to do that. We got to look at the nigga that's going to try to appeal to him, to his moral character, and begging and hoping and praying and pleading that he change. You know, keep hope alive. Hope alive against what? The only hope you should keep alive is his demise. That is it. In the Bible, there's no, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the Lord, you know, what we refer to as God, right? You know, in the Bible, you know, he has several names, you know. They just don't tell you that, you know, the shit in Aramaic or Hebrew or whatever it is. They don't just say it like, you know, or whatever. In Islam, they say that God has 99 names. They don't worship 99 gods. It's just that he has 99 attributes. This is one of them. This is one of them. And so forth, right? So, you know, the Bible has these names too, right? You know, we just don't pronounce them in Hebrew because the shit, names have meanings. Like, there's a name, was a, his name means, in English, will be the equivalent, he who does what no one else does. So they'll just put, it'll read like that in the English book. He who does what no one else does. That's it. But when you try to say his name, you go back and say, what's his name? His name is Umkulumkulu. Umkulumkulu. That's his name. Or Ludumare. That's his name. This is the name that we originally knew. So when the Muslims came, Oludumare got replaced with what? Allah. You know, when the Christians brought their shit, right, Oludumare got replaced by what? The Lord. You see the difference? The Lord. Now, the Lord is actually a title that they use over there in Western Europe, in Greater Britain. Yeah, Lord Dunsmore. Lord Rothschild. Yeah, you know, literally, that's a title. That's a title. So imagine that. Just picture that. They've taken through colonialism. We no longer say Oludumare, but it ain't totally wiped out. Let me just give you an example of the strategy, the attack of the imperialists. You see. I can't make this shit up, man. It is what it is. It's just about us relearning, like Fanon said, the new African, the building and reconstituting of the new African man. This is why the brothers and sisters here in the snakes refer to themselves as new African freedom fighters. You know, the new African people's organization. You know, yeah, that's right. You know. Straight up. But it could never be mathematically possible if what we're told is the devil is ruling and we think that we're going to go and get some legislation from him to stop his goons from murdering us. How could that be possible? It's like the sheep going to the leader of the wolf pack. Well, shit, to begin with, all the damn sheep that's going to the lead up the wolf pack really ain't sheep. the old Warner Brothers cartoon that I saw that I remember. He had this whole gang of sheep, right? And mother, I think it was a sheep would clock out or something like that, whatever. And the mother would take the zipper and unzipping his he was unzipping his suit. And out from that would be a wolf. It's amazing shit. So all the sheep that's going to the lead up the wolf pack in the first place, one or two of them is a wolf. So how is that possible? He got to be the devil or he ain't. Or is he part devil and part God? How does that work? Nowhere in the Bible does it say that. It would be the end. You see what I'm saying? So how is that possible? And they accept this system up that does what? Keeps them in the lofty position. Now, you know, we say one or two occasions about, you know, police terror and that voting no confidence in this government and that the people should get together, the families of the victims should get together and press UN charges on. Go to UN court, the international court on. You know, we've mentioned that, we've said that. And, okay, well, why? You know, someone said, well, what you just explained, isn't that the same thing as trying to go to UN and get justice? What's the whole point of doing? The whole point is to expose them to the world for the hypocrites that they are. When they come up with these so-called humanitarian rights and whatnot, right? You know, these planks about human rights and whatnot, right? You know, tribal rights, indigenous people, nations, stuff like that, right? Right? And they define what genocide and violations against, you know, the UN, the American delegation ain't want no part of it. They ain't signing on to that shit. Didn't want no part of it. Why they didn't want no part of it? Because they know what they was going to be doing. They know that their ambition is going to make them clash with the indigenous people, and they'll wipe them the fuck out just to take over their land to do what? To do what? Logging. Destroy the ecosystems to do what? So they can log the goddamn trees, put the trees on some shit, put them in the thing, and ship them overseas, run them through the process, right? Make some of the wood weather treated, and then boom, shit, you go to Walmart, you go to Home Depot, and what you got? You got weather treated wood. You want to build a deck in the back of your house, right? So who did they have to screw over for you to have a nice deck in your backyard? You see, that's how this shit works in Latin America. This is why. El Comandante. Man, we gotta get arrested. But yeah, was the leader of the guerrilla warfare campaign. And shit, when did they start that? When did they start that campaign? You know, to extricate themselves out of those insane practices and stuff like that. Subjugation. When did they do it? They waited till them homies started celebrating New Year's and shit. Popped up on. Yeah, El Comandante Marcos. Brilliant. What do you do? He learned the same thing. He started understanding capitalism, right? How the Marxian theory dissects capitalism, right? And the idea of the possibility of socialism, which leads to full-blown communism. The white ruling class hate socialism, communism, not because of some inherent evil. The main reason why the Europeans, the rich, disdain it is because they pulled up at the club, you know, the club that everybody likes to go to on the weekend in Houston. Okay. In the limo. You got it. And the line is like a block long, half block long. Okay. Pull up in the limo. Under that type of system, you get your ass in line like everybody else. You should have left home early. So you can be one of the first ones up at the front. Pull the club open. You want to pull up late, you get your ass out that limo. That's your, look, whatever floats your boat, how you want to get there. Well, however you want to do. You can land that motherfucker in a helicopter. But when you come out that helicopter, you get your ass in the line just like everybody else do. You see what I'm saying? That's why such things as the socialist concept. Because what it does, it obliterates these class boundaries. Now, we've spoken about this socialism thing. Karl Marx ain't invent no socialism. All Karl Marx did was just study the indigenous black and brown people that was in America and the indigenous tribes and understood how their system, which we refer to as Confederated States, and these terms that they used and how they existed and coexisted among each other. That's how he developed that concept. And I can't make this shit up because his partner, Engels, Frederick Engels, he wrote a book called The Origin of Private Property and something in the State or some shit like that, right? Yeah. It's from the shit up in there. In Africa, it's always been known as Mbundu or Bantu or Bundu or Mundu. You know, it's a way of life. The communal. You see? And this is what our people must get back to. You know, because obviously, capitalism has failed because it was never meant to succeed in the first place. How is that some foreign idea is going to come to your land and show you better than you can show yourself, and you've been there for Lord knows, since Lord knows when? And again, we must have been sitting there twiddling our thumbs. Man, we're running out of time, shit. we'll be back next week again. You know, we got a whole lot more to say. We're going to speak on the African Union and a whole lot of other things. We're going to speak on the East Asians present in Africa, the Chinese. We're going to speak on that too. An update on Mother Africa. You know, so and I know we in here, we say all power to the people. Black power to black people specifically. Your whole rule. You know what I'm saying? True liberation. And so we'll see you next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And we out of here. We'll be right back.
Never, ever, ever let the devil get.